Welcome to Girl Power History. This is our first episode. My name is Brianna Puro.
And I'm Alexa Kontos.
And we are here to tell stories throughout history that we think need to be told about powerful women. Each week, Alexa or myself will bring you a story about women throughout history.
All right, so today we are going to be talking about Dutch resistance fighters in Woo-hoo! World War II.
Yeah, we are. I am so excited for this story.
I'm really excited too. And I rewrote like a lot of it this morning because suddenly had new information. Good if true.
New information coming from mid-century.
This just in.
It was only 70 years ago.
Oh, I'm glad you came in with the math on that one.
Am I right?
I think so.
No, I don't think it's 70. I think it would be, right?
Well, you know.
We're not strong at math here. We're just going to be here talking about history.
As I shove my business degree right into the drawer.
I own a business.
Okay, so this story is what I think the Quentin Tarantino movie Inglourious Basterds could have really been about, and I think it would have been way cooler. And I know Quentin Tarantino is listening right now. I said what I said. In some multiverse, we're really good friends, Quentin and I, and I know he was really supportive about this podcast, and he was dying to hear our first episode, so I'm going to have to text him. So without further ado.
You guys are in a text relationship?
We are. All right, I'm going to bring you this story. So we begin. It is August 29th, 1923, and Truus Overstegen was born. And her sister, Freddie Overstegen, was born on September 6th, 1925. The sisters grew up in Haarlem, which is the capital of North Holland in the Netherlands. It is on the northern edge of Randstad, which is one of the most populated metropolitan areas in all of Europe. And Haarlem is also about 12 miles away from Amsterdam, where the Olympic Games were held shortly after in 1928. And that's when Freddie and Truus were just small girls.
Is that where they met?
No, they're sisters.
Oh, sorry. I didn't get that part. My bad. Just to clarify for everyone out there, they're sisters, obviously.
All right. So, thanks for listening. So, Truus and Freddie were primarily raised by their mother, who divorced their father, which was very uncommon at the time. Freddie, later in an interview with Vice, said that one day her mother, whose name was, I think it's Trinity, but there's several J's in there. She was just fed up one day, and he didn't make any money for the family and didn't pay for anything, so that was that. And also, they were living on a barge at the time, so I'm sort of picturing, like, when someone gets fired, like, halfway through the season on Below Deck, and, like, their dad had to, like, report to the captain's quarters, and she just handed him, like, a ticket, like, I'm gonna need you to pack your bags.
Oh. Wait, so how do you live on a barge? Like a boathouse?
I think it's I'm picturing a boathouse, but barge sounds...
like, I think of, like, New York trash barge. Like, I think of, like, there's this barge where there's all these trash, and we're getting it out of the major
city. I'm sure it was a little bit
city.
Nicer than that. I don't think they were just, like, climbing, like, all over, like, a bunch of, like, trash piles. Like,
I'm thinking houseboat, because there are, like, yes. When I went to Denmark, there were, like, a lot of people that lived in houseboats.
Oh, okay. So I'm sure that's exactly... Yeah. I think that's the same thing. So, okay. Freddie did say that he sang a French farewell song before he left.
And that's kind of cute.
Yeah. And I also think that would also work for Below Deck. I think it'd be a really good promo cut for them.
I've never seen that show. I know you like it.
But I'm going to talk about it anyway. You really don't.
I hate reality TV.
It's terrible. I'm not condoning it whatsoever.
Trash TV, if you're interested, this is what we watch.
It's good if you're like writing a paper or studying to have it like on in the background.
Gotcha. That's where I cue in Criminal Minds.
Exactly. So after the divorce, they decided that the ship life was not for them, and they moved into a small flat in Harlem, and her mother handmade them mattresses out of straw to sleep on. And
does not sound comfortable.
I mean, you never know. What if it's like super ergonomic? I'm not judging.
Yeah, so no judgment.
Trinity would eventually remarry and have a son, and they would remain living in poverty for most of their life. She said that they never had much, but they were always singing, which is sweet.
That is cute. In French?
Maybe.
Well, her dad sang the French song, so that's true. Just want to, yeah, maybe, you know, that's one thing that I love about, like, Europeans. They speak, like, 7 different languages.
I know, I'm really jealous of that.
And are fluent in all of them.
Yeah. I'm, like, 2% fluent in, like, a bunch of languages on Duolingo, but I'm sure that's not even like remotely the same thing.
That's how I felt like when I went to Mexico and I was like, just kidding, can't speak this language.
I'm just gonna point to things.
Yes.
So World War II began on September 1st, 1939, when Germany invaded Poland. And they began to close in closer to like the Oversteegen family with the aerial bombing of Rotterdam in May of 1940, which is the largest Dutch city. And most of the city was entirely destroyed. 900 citizens were killed and 85,000 were left homeless.
Oh my gosh.
A small tangent. I learned that now the city was rebuilt and is now well known for its innovative and modern architecture, but largely remains a city of working class people. And I found one quote saying, "Money is earned in Rotterdam, divided in The Hague, and spent in Amsterdam," which I thought was pretty cool.
That is cool. I wonder why. Well, Amsterdam is like the major city. So,
and The Hague is like the government capital.
Yeah. Okay. Well, taxes in that area are like most of their income, though, because they have like free healthcare, free school. Yeah. So a lot of that is put towards government, but it covers everything. Their systems are so different than here.
I want to go. Okay.
I know you do.
All right, so 4 days after the aerial bombardment of Rotterdam, the Netherlands was conquered by the Nazis. And when the Nazis invaded Holland, Freddie and Truus began handing out pamphlets opposing the Nazi occupation. And these pamphlets were warning others not to go to Germany because there were posters everywhere that were calling for Dutch workers to go in Germany. I couldn't find exactly like what they were, you know, going to do, but there was a new venture of camps being built everywhere. So I am just going to assume that that's where these Dutch workers were being used if they did indeed go to Germany. So we're now in 1942. Their mother was a communist and she taught them communist principles, but she also had a fierce intolerance for injustice, according to Smithsonian Magazine. And the Oversteegen family hid a Jewish family in their home when the war started in the Netherlands. And this was something that they were familiar with because the family also hid a Lithuanian family in the barge they lived on previously. And I couldn't exactly align why this family was in hiding, but I did find out that Lithuanian Jewish people were one of the highest victim rates, like during the Holocaust. And like, so most of them were killed in the genocide, which I did not know. And I'm part Lithuanian, so that was really interesting.
I mean, if you looked at a map, it would be pretty close to Germany. So that would make sense. But I guess so, I thought more Germany, Jewish.
So I'm just assuming that the Lithuanian family that they were hiding like before everything started was kind of like a prelude to you know, the persecution that happened during the war, but, you know, everything hadn't officially started yet. Freddie stated that she knew that the people that they were hiding were supposed to be the enemy because they were communist and Jewish people were capitalists. But even as a small child, she knew that even because these people were supposed enemies, it didn't mean that they, you know, should be killed or like any of this should be happening. So the Overstegen family kept sheltering Jewish families in order to aid their escape in the Nazi occupation. But eventually the mother could not continually hide them. And a lot of them were caught and killed while trying to escape the area. One thing I did read, and I've read this a few times, is that when people were being taken from their homes, you could hear the Germans banging on the doors of the houses with the butts of their rifles, and it would like echo throughout the neighborhoods. So, I mean, just imagine like being constantly surrounded by like you can't escape it.
Terror. Yeah. That's just terrifying. So she was, 19 during that, the second family of Jewish family that they were in hiding.
This would be like right around like 14 to 16 for both of the sisters. Yeah. So they were pretty young.
For both of them. Okay.
And also as a related tangent, at the same time that this was happening, Anne Frank and her family, and Anne Frank was 13 when she was went into hiding, they were hiding in Amsterdam. So that was 12 miles away. And then they were, Anne Frank and her family were captured in 1945. And they were sent to Bergen-Belsen camp in Lower Germany, where they both died of typhus in 1945.
Mm. I couldn't imagine having to go through this and constantly just be fighting to live every day.
Yeah, and I just think it's really an interesting parallel to make in the timeline, because Anne Frank was 13 when she went into hiding in Amsterdam, and Freddie and Truce were, you know, 14 and 16, and they're in, you know, relatively the same area. And I think it's just strange how different their stories are just because of circumstance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was entirely tragic, but it's just crazy to me, like how similar yet different, you know, the outcomes, you know, were.
Yeah. Had to overcome so much in their lives at such a young age.
14 too. And 16 and 13. It's just, it is
just not what, that's just not what your childhood should be at that age.
So at the age of 14 and 16, was when Freddie and Truce were offered a place in the Dutch resistance. And I think of this like the start of a movie, like the Dutch resistance leader came to their door. It's kind of like their Harry Potter moment. And I have two ways of looking at this in my head. Like one is like a super cool, like spy movie with a bunch of like Guy Ritchie cuts. And then the other side is like, I just imagine like Hagrid, like knocking down the door saying like, "You're an assassin, Freddy." So whichever one you want to picture in your head is totally fine with me. Anyway.
They're kind of both in my head now. So they're like mixing.
like a Guy Ritchie Harry Potter movie. Oh, that'd be so good.
I'm imagining Hagrid in that movie now. So
yes. Anyway,
it's weird.
Enough of my delusions. The leaders saw them handing out the pamphlets and thought that they would be perfect for being unsuspecting members to carry out tasks right under the noses of the Nazis, because after all, they were two sweet young looking girls. The leader asked their mother if they were allowed to join, and she said yes. And I found one quote that their mother said before they left for training is to always stay human.
She sounds like a cool lady.
I know. And I mean, I have two daughters. You've met them.
Have I? Yes.
Just
kidding.
And
your kids are cool.
I think they're so brave, but I also couldn't imagine like their mom sending them to go out and be in the Dutch resistance. And it's such an important job, but also like thinking like, are they even going to come home? I couldn't imagine like making that decision.
But I feel like during that time, especially like you grew up faster. So you know, I mean, their mom was probably having kids when she was a teenager.
Definitely.
Or early 20s. Yeah. So, you know, I'm grateful I don't I wasn't forced to have kids that early. You know, I don't have kids yet and I'm 30. So this would be super weird in that time to mm-hmm. not have kids and be 30.
Yeah, it's hard to think about that because you really can't draw parallels from today and back then. It's just, it was just a different time. Yes.
Yeah, war changes everything too. So that's like, yeah, I couldn't imagine. But I also could not imagine being a mother and having to go through that either.
Yeah, mom life is hard. Yeah. Okay, so cut to a training montage in the movie. They were recruited by Commander Franz Vanderweil, and they learned many techniques that they would later use in their assassinations. They learned how to rig railways and bridges with dynamite in order to block passage and travel for the Nazis, and they also mastered weaponry. And wow. I know, isn't that so cool? It's like, what did you guys do at camp?
I learned how to be an actual assassin.
I feel like this is like what Girl Scout, like this is the Girl Scouts that like I would have wanted to like be in.
Like if they would have sold cookies, I would have blow shit up.
If they would have sold me on this, like I would have gone right away. I did like a week of brownies and I was like, this is, no thanks.
I was great at selling cookies though.
One of the most important lessons that they learned was how to roam right through areas filled with Nazi soldiers. And a lot of this was successfully accomplished due to their looks. They could both look very, very young. So they had their hair in braids. They were two girls just riding bikes right through the occupied territory. But in reality, they were transporting weapons and paperwork for the resistance.
That's so cool.
And
how
they ended up
terrifying though.
Like I know.
Oh my gosh. Like thinking like, I don't know. I couldn't imagine being like that young going through a war zone. Also trying to pick up clues when you're like 14, 15. And then also there had to be like creepy old men that were like Nazi officers back then, like trying to like talk to you or something too. Like,
oh, definitely. I think that part has and will always exist in some degree in any situation like that.
And they're like transporting guns and paperwork, like on top of all of the other things that they're also doing.
Yes.
Small details.
So they also ended up doing, they did so many different things for the resistance. They would hide refugees. They would get them false identification so they could escape, you know, the territory. They hid and protected many children that were refugees and smuggled them out of the Netherlands. And they were not always successful in their missions and not all of the children survived. And some were recaptured. And that was one thing in particular that I read was just a grief that like none of them were really ever able to overcome or forget in their lives. And
that would be really hard.
One of like the biggest operations that they ever did was they burned down an entire Nazi warehouse. That was their first big mission. That was Mission Impossible, like one.
That's awesome. Children, I like losing a child as, you know, a parent is devastating, but like during when you see like mass, you know, murder of children, like it just, I could not imagine the burden of not being successful. So
exactly. Cause I mean, you took them into your care and like, if you didn't, you know, get them out, like I couldn't imagine like carrying that grief with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're just kids. They're innocent.
Kids helping other kids.
Yeah. That's so sad.
So their most important job, however, was in Freddie's words, described as a necessary evil, was assassinating Nazi officers and Dutch collaborators because they would never suspect two pretty young girls. So this is how they would do it. One of them would stand outside of a bar as a lookout, and the other girl would go inside and she would find the highest ranking officer and start flirting with them. And after a while, she would ask to go for a walk in the woods. And on that walk, they would pass by a member of the resistance, and the officer would be executed and left in a grave that was dug earlier. And I sort of think of grave prepping, like meal prepping, Like, do you think they did it like on Sunday mornings? Like, I'm going to make salads for lunch this week, and then I'm going to dig 5 graves because hashtag goals, hashtag dig deep, hashtag CrossFit.
Like, CrossFit.
Yeah.
They probably had to be very careful about it though, too. So, but awesome that they had all these people helping them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just them. So yeah, they actually didn't have to do the murders.
So they did after a while, but that was just one of their, they would call it liquidating their own targets. And they usually did it on their bikes, which as someone who struggles staying on a stationary bike, I'm very impressed because there's no way that I could do that.
They had a good aim.
I know. So when they weren't luring officers from bars, they would follow them home and ambush them at their homes too. So that was what they were, you know, doing. And although both women became very proficient in their work, it was still difficult to cope with what they were doing. And Freddie said that she often felt a subconscious need to help their victims after the attack.
The Nazi victims?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think it was just like a gut reaction of just like, oh my God, this person's hurt. And I think it has to be like a response. Which I can't imagine not having that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, like, I think that's like what it comes down to is like at the very core of like a situation like that, it's just you're two human beings and one is ceasing to exist. And I think at the very core of like your id is just like that's what it comes down to. And like there's always going to be, depending on like the person you are, it's always going to come down to that and just, you know, not, you know, wanting to harm people, even though like that's what you're doing and that's
and you're saving other people's lives.
Exactly. Like, and it's for, you know, fighting this horrible thing that was happening at that time. So this is the time when they meet Joanne Hanney Shaft, and she was known as the girl with the red hair. Hanney was born in Harlem, Netherlands on September 16th, 1920. She was very outspoken about politics from a very young age. She then decided to pursue law studies at the University of Amsterdam. Her main interest was international law and dreamed of joining the League of Nations in Geneva, which now is what the United Nations is. And she eventually wanted to become a human rights lawyer. So World War II was happening and Germany began occupying the Netherlands in 1940. And in 1943, all the students in the university were required to sign a declaration of allegiance with the occupying German forces. But Hanney refused and she had to leave the school and move back in with her parents because she could no longer attend classes there if she didn't sign the allegiance. And then her resistance work started right then and she started stealing IDs for her Jewish friends so they could escape. And I believe she even took a couple of her friends to live with her and hide them when she left the university. All right, so this is when she joins the resistance, and it is so crazy how this all went down. I think it is so cool. Resistance was called RVV, which is Rode Van Verzet, or the Council of Resistance. And she contacted the RVV and said, you know, like, hey, I want in. Here's my resume. You'll see my extracurriculars below. And
I didn't sign anything. I left school. Exactly. And I'm here to help.
You know? And now I'm here.
I'm hiding some people.
I can work nights and weekends. So her first assignment was an assassination of a member of the, oh boy, here we go, Sicherheitsdienst, which is also called the SD, which is what I'm going to say from here on out. I'm sorry. So she found the target, but when she went to pull the trigger, she heard a click instead of a shot because it was a test. And the target was none other than Franz Vanderweil himself, which was the guy that recruited Freddie and Truce in the first place.
Oh, they tested him?
Yep. So She passed. She got in. She was also fluent in German, which allowed her to easily become involved with German soldiers and to get information. But this also led some members of the resistance to think that she was a traitor. And that kind of always stuck. And in 1943, I know. So they all met, and this
so
was.
So then there was three.
They were inseparable.
Okay.
They performed many missions together over the next 2 years. Hanny did become known after this as the girl with the red hair with the Nazis, and she was put on a most wanted list. So they knew who she was this whole time. One of the missions over the next 2 years they would not accept was a plot by the resistance to kidnap the children of Nazi officers and use them as collateral to exchange for captured resistance members. And the girls thought that if something happened to the children, they would be no better than the Nazis. And I think that this goes back to the failed attempts from trying to rescue children. Like, they just didn't want anything to do with it. On either side, children were innocent and they're off limits.
It's a good moral, like, compass, though. Like, even during that time, like, yes, there should always be a line that is drawn.
Yeah.
Especially in war.
I agree. Because, I mean, I would think that, like, you can't sink as low as Nazis.
No.
What's any lower than that? So at one point, she was identified near an attempted assassination, and a fellow resistance fighter that was injured was also captured during that time and mistakenly gave Hanny's name to the German authorities, who promptly arrested her parents and sent them to a concentration camp called Voigt. And
how
I can't
mistakenly give up a name.
So I think what happened was he was gravely, gravely injured. I think he was being detained, but also being questioned by a Dutch nurse who was working for them. He died shortly after that. So I think, I can't imagine how that went down, but I think it was just, it was something that happened. I can't really find out what happened to her parents afterward, like after her parents were arrested, but I did not find that they were dead. And I know this was like right around when the war was going to end. So I'm hoping that they were maybe released.
If anyone finds information, please email us.
So after her parents were arrested, she ended up kind of like laying low, and she dyed her hair black and she started wearing glasses. And she also got a fake ID under the assumed name Johanna Elderkamp, who was from Zurich, Switzerland. After changing her appearance, she did continue to work, and she mainly provided a courier service between Velsen and The Hague.
I'm surprised she chose black for her hair color.
How many hair colors were there at the time? I'm just going to pop down to the Target during World War II and grab, you know, just a fairy highlight. I just need to add some.
Some light. I just need to be blonde.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right. On March 21st, 1945, just a few weeks before the war would end, the girls went on a mission, but Hanny did not report back. She was stopped at a checkpoint where officers discovered a pistol and copies of an illegal newspaper called Die Wahrheit, which loosely means to tell the truth. She ended up being detained in Harlem and interrogated, where she never revealed her true identity until she was transported to a prison in Amsterdam and a guard noticed that her roots were red during the transport, and they discovered that she was indeed the redheaded girl on the most wanted list. Although the Germans and the Dutch forces had an agreement to suspend executions of resistance fighters, Willy Lages, who was the German chief of the SD in Amsterdam, gave explicit orders for Hanny to be executed. Hanny Schaft was executed on April 17th, 1945, at the age of 24.
Wow.
And it is said that the executioner failed to shoot her on the first try, and she taunted to them, saying, "I'm a better shot."
I love her.
I know.
God, she's so cool.
So cool. So she died only 18 days before the Netherlands was liberated from the Nazis. And although her fellow resistance members, including Freddy and Truce, fought to find where Hanny was being held captive to liberate her, they only found her name a day after her execution by discovering it crossed out in a prison record.
Oh, that's so sad. Mm-hmm.
After the war ended, Freddy and Truce would never fully heal from the loss of Hanny. Freddie always took red roses to Hanny's grave when she was reinterred at the Cemetery of Honor in Bloemendaal in 1945. And out of 421 graves, she resides in plot 22 as the only woman resistance fighter buried there. And she was reburied in the presence of Queen Wilhelmina, Princess Juliana, and Prince Bernard of the Netherlands. And she was posthumously given the Verzekris Resistance Cross and the Medal of Freedom by Dwight D. Eisenhower. And there are also 15 cities in the Netherlands with a street named after her.
Wow. And I've never heard of her before you brought the story up.
So
that is incredible.
Isn't it?
It's like absolutely incredible to hear how women made a difference, like way back then. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to use women to show that we, one, have the ability to, I mean, do anything essentially, mm-hmm. and learn anything, and then also use that to the advantage of getting away and sneaking, like, you know, being posing as a young girl and getting through. It's just amazing. That story blows me away.
Also, no one else could have done that. Like, what other situation would have been possible in order to make those, you know, assassinations happen? Like, they wouldn't have happened.
And y'all need women. Mm-hmm. Y'all need women.
Who knows, you know, if that didn't happen, if they weren't there, what changes, you know, would have been made. I mean, the Netherlands could have possibly never, you know, had their freedom. It's just crazy to think of, like, all these little things that, you know, happened in, you know, wars like this that were so important.
And I do feel like women are not associated with war ever.
Yeah.
You know, and having women to be such a critical part in assassinations, and maybe it's because it's more like the secret missions. That's why it's not really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we just starting to be, like, in the United States, being able to be, like, frontline. How many years ago? 15?
Yeah.
So it's not like it was that long ago that women are actually being accepted into being part of war. So yeah. At least frontline, they were able to be other parts, but a little different.
Yeah. So after the war, the Netherlands never really fully went back to, you know, how it was pre-war. In the 1950s, McCarthyism started to take over in the United States once the Cold War began. And as the resistance fighters began opposing communism, they began being viewed as the opposition. Meanwhile, a lot of the Nazi sympathizers were able to just go back to business as usual, like nothing happened. And in 1951, the Dutch government even tried to stop a commemoration of Hanny Schaff's death. And coming from Freddie Overstegen, she said that she really didn't feel like she belonged in the country that she fought so hard for.
That's sad.
So Freddie went on to marry an engineer called Jan Dekker. They had three children, which she said was a way of distracting herself from the trauma of her previous life. And although her family noted in interviews that she always struggled to deal with the trauma, especially on the day that they mourn everyone on, it's called the Remembrance of the Dead, and that's on May 4th, Freddie continued to struggle with opening up about her experiences, especially earlier in her life.
Sorry. I always, even when it comes to death, I always like to say, like, celebration, even though it's remembrance and celebration, yeah. Because it's, You started saying celebration, but then you were like, which I just wanted to call out, like,
we had, you know,
celebrating their life is
celebration of
100%.
Life.
Yeah. Because, you know, mourning is, you don't want to mourn someone because it's, I mean, you can, if that's your process, have your process, but I like to celebrate their lives and their accomplishments, which I think that's what we're doing right here. So
I completely agree. So Truce ended up marrying a fellow resistance fighter, and she ended up becoming, she became an artist, and she created sculptures in honor of Hanny, and she ended up also writing a memoir. A film was released about Hanny Shaft in 1981 called The Girl with the Red Hair, which brought renewed focus on Hanny and the Overstegen sisters. And this was a time when Hanny Shaft did become more well-known. They were all awarded medals of military service by the Dutch government in 1943, and the prime minister at the time called their work in the resistance an act of historical justice. The sisters were extremely bonded during their time as resistance fighters, and they shared that connection for the rest of their lives. They put their lives in each other's hands during these missions, and that bond grew to the point where they could understand each other with just one word. In 2016, Freddie gave a rare interview that resulted in a documentary called Two Sisters in the Resistance. She even led the documentarians to the burial place of an SS officer that they killed. And this was one of the first times that Freddie was truly highlighted for her work in the resistance, because she never really gave interviews and was able to talk about what she had gone through.
I feel like there was a time that it probably, they felt like it wasn't even accepted for what they did. If their country was going back into, I mean, essentially their old ways, that like doing everything they did didn't accomplish anything, you know, feeling that. So why would you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that she started to open up because things were changing in their country.
Yeah. And I definitely think that that's just a thing of the past, was just like, you don't really talk about things, especially trauma. I feel like talking about trauma and processing it, you know, in like an open way, is, it's still so new.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like grandma has never talked about trauma to us, and you know, she's been through stuff.
Like, oh yeah.
She'll make like comments sometimes, and I'm like, oh really?
Yeah.
Like, she's like, oh, happened to everybody. And I'm just like, what? That is called trauma.
Yes.
So she's 96. Our grandmother is 96.
Yes. And yeah, so she's been through some stuff.
She's amazing. Yeah, she's a badass.
So a lot of my quotes were from interviews with Freddie, but all of that was done really, you know, like later in her life. So all of it was, you know, very late in life. She died on September 5th, 2018, one day before her 93rd birthday. And
2018?
Yes.
That's 3 years ago.
I know.
Wow.
And so like all the articles say that she was 92, but I feel like just give her the 93 years. It was one day.
Yeah. Give her the, yeah. It was one day. Oh, one day before her birthday.
I know.
Where did she pass away at?
Believe she grew, I think she stayed in Harlem.
Did she?
Mm, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's my story. I will be posting all the sources in our show description, but many of them are from The Guardian, Wikipedia, Smithsonian Magazine, History.com, and Vice. And that
absolutely
is
incredible.
The Dutch resistance fighters.
You crushed it. That was amazing.
Thanks.
That was, honestly, I am so happy that you talked about that story, because I've never heard of it. And now I want to look up the documentaries, and I want to watch that movie. Do you know if it's in English? Or I bet there's some,
I think
subtitles.
It's subtitled. I said the English title, but there's definitely not an English title. I just didn't want to say it and butcher it.
Okay. We'll have to link that too. So we, because I would love to share that with everybody.
Yeah,
so
I would love to find a way to link things because there's a lot of YouTube documentaries. The Vice article is, it's so raw and real, but also funny. Like, so I think it's just, it's really, it's a cool read. So I highly recommend that. There was some article. Yeah, there's some stuff. There's the documentary, all good things.
Yeah, I know sometimes when I learn something new or discover something, I do a incredible deep dive into more information on it.
Yes.
So if any of our listeners do that with this one, please feel free to share with us what you find.
Yes.
Because we would love to add more more light to these fantastic, powerful women.
And I really would love to keep the story going too. So as you know, we listeners discover, you know, more information about that. There's always room to add, you know, more context, I think, to stories. And I think that should always be a revolving, we can always, you know, learn more about a certain subject.
Yep, definitely. Definitely. And I bet these women have so many, so many incredible stories and powerful, just I just can't imagine what they went through. And mm-hmm. I hope that there's some more documentations of it, and I can't wait to dig in. So the next part of our episode, we want to highlight some women that we are loving right now. So we want to talk about either different music or different writers or, you know, different podcasts, just people in today's society that we are loving what they're doing. It can be businesses, it can be, you know, anything. So totally different than what we just talked about. But my today woman of this episode is going to be Carly Pearce. She just came out with a new album called 29. It's a little sappy. I like it though. I'm into it. It's been on repeat. It's pretty much like a breakup, but like a adult relationship breakup. Ooh. It's not going to be like, it's, I'm happily married, but you know, I do get into the sappy, emotional music.
Sometimes I feel like I want to be sad.
Sometimes I just want to listen to an album and cry. Okay. And, but it also is like, I don't know. It's a good album. Really like her. It's country. Not always into country, but I really like her voice. Check it out if you want to listen to some sad breakup country music. So
I will listen to it.
That's what I got.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't really listen to country.
I know, but it's like a good one. I don't know. I'm just like, I'm really into her voice too. I'm like, hey girl. So anyways, what do you got?
I don't know. I don't really have anything this week. I held a tooth in my hand this morning, which I find so revolting. It's something that grosses me out so much. I can't teeth.
So are you saying this is your accomplishment of the week?
I didn't throw up. Let's go with I didn't throw up. There's my accomplishment. Everly's tooth fell out. For some reason, I was like, here, put it in my hand because I don't have anything else right now. You have to go to school. And so I held her tooth in my hand, and I can deal with so much stuff with children. I'm the person, okay? I'm the cleaner. I'm the person that you call when you're like, I got to get this cleaned up. I'm like the person that like in the mob, like I will get it handled. But a tooth, I don't know. There's some ritual about like, let's collect all their teeth and keep them. Let's hide it under a pillow. I don't know what we're doing here, but there's a tooth upstairs. Actually, I don't remember where I put it. I'm going to have to go look after this.
Is it in your pocket? I feel like it's in your pocket or it's in the car.
I don't have any pockets. I bought these pants.
It would be really funny if you're just like, oh, there's the tooth.
I bought these at H&M. They don't have pockets, okay?
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
I didn't pay
for
pockets.
That's your accomplishment.
Yes.
So... good job.
Got that. So I'm setting the bar super low, you guys. So I would like you to write in as well and tell me your accomplishments. You can't disappoint us from here, okay?
You really can't. I'm sitting here telling you about a sappy album, and Alexa's like, this is what I did this week.
Different perspectives.
Yeah. So this segment of the episode, we would love to highlight our listeners' accomplishments. And yes, if it's getting teeth in your hand or throw up, because that's my no. Mine is like, which I've held throw up in my hand before. And I'm just like, can't handle it. Anyways, bodily functions. Yeah. So we'd love for you to write in just a blurb of like what, you know, what your accomplishments are. They can be anything. You know, we would love to hear from you. And we'd love to highlight you as well. So, because we want to support other women, and everything you are accomplishing in life is something that should be highlighted.
And you can write to us at hello@girlpowerhistory.com.
Is that it? What else we got? Anything else?
I think that's it. Tune in next week for a story by our own Brianna Pirro.
That's me. I won't tell you what it is yet because...
No, it's going to be a secret.
It's a surprise. So super excited. We're going a different direction than this.
Yes. Each episode is going to be different. And I think we're doing that on purpose because, A, we want to include everyone's interests. And also, I think it's fun to change things up and have different things, you know, every week.
Yeah. So. It's going to be... All over the map. Musicians, writers, inventions. Our focus is murderers, serial killers, women in general, doing everything throughout history. So we want to highlight those stories and continue to tell their stories because history is her story.
And women, we do things too. Oh.
Yeah, because women are badass.
Sorry, was that our outro?
That could have been, but we're going to keep going.
We'll just,
it was our outro.
You guys are just not going to know that we left. We're just going to stop talking.
and
we're going to end this like a drop call.
It's an Irish goodbye, even though we're Italian. Yep. No, this is the Italian goodbye where we keep saying goodbye because That's we don't true. Know how to end it.
That's all right. Tune in next week to Girl Power History. Thanks for listening. Thank you to our dear friends Carly and Dylan Peterson for creating our theme song and show music. You can follow their band Valentine on Spotify and on social media at Valentine the Band. Visit our show description for sources and episode links. Email us at hello@girlpowerhistory.com and follow us on all social media platforms at Girl Power History. Girl Power History. History. Girl Power History.